Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Michael Janz, founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry, discern and deconstruct what they're doing to help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the podcast. My guest is a communication expert, or an expert in people. Her name is Brandi Heinen. She is the founder and CEO of Powerhouse Learning. She has a long history in the insurance industry. By the year 2000, she had a $600,000 commission book of business. She has also been a vice president for a large five-location agency. She supervised over 100 carrier relationships. She worked in marketing for Unitrin. She has been a trainer for the National Alliance for Insurance Education and Research. She's been a trainer for Dynamics of Selling, Dynamics of Company-Agency Relations. She helped create the curriculum for Dynamics of Personal Lines, and she started her own firm in 2003. I'm excited to pass this conversation on, and I'll tell you what we talked about. Number one, the essence of communication between agency leadership and their team. And Brandi provides her insights on how to communicate with your team so that they are inspired and aligned and productive. We also talk about communications between the agency and their customers, and what really gets my juices going is kind of towards the end of our conversation when we talk about the role that mentoring can play to increase the skill set, increase the capability of your team. Before I move on, I want to remind you that I like to hear from you, so feel free to give me feedback on any podcast. You can reach me at michael@agencyrevolution.com. You can reach me by connecting with me on LinkedIn. So would love your feedback. Also, would love to hear from you about anybody you think we should add to the podcast. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce you to this conversation with Brandi Heinen. Hello, Brandi. It's a delight to have you with us today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you because it's about a topic that no matter what we're talking about seems to surface, which is people. I know that my listeners may occasionally wonder, gosh, since this is an insurance podcast, why doesn't Michael talk more about insurance? And my answer to that is there are lots of places where you can learn about insurance. My focus really is on one singular question, which is what makes insurance agents successful? So, and over the years I've noticed, probably no surprise, that many of my own best, most successful clients perceive themselves as an insurance agent second. They perceive themselves as an entrepreneur or a marketer first. So in that context, no matter how well they do as an entrepreneur, no matter how successful they are as a marketer, the question, the issue, and the problems of people constantly arises.
Right.
That's not a question. That's a statement, but I am going to ask you to comment on that.
Right. So, you know, when I'm up in front of audiences or I'm working with my customers, I say, are the biggest problems on the task-oriented side of the business, getting things done, or on the people side, which is actually getting people to do the tasks? And without question, the audience says, it's the people side. It's me being able to get stuff done. It's me being able to maneuver around tough, difficult situations with my underwriters, with my prospects, with my team. How do I actually move people to get the tasks done? So it's not the tasks, really. It's the people. Time management. Yeah, it's really about people.
Okay, so let's break it down, because we have a lot of people that are in our universe. Like you said, we have underwriters and carrier reps, and we have our team, and we have customers. Let's start with the team, because that is a constant conversation. Even among many of the best marketers that are in my universe, like members of our Million Dollar Club, generally, I like to bring them together to talk about marketing strategy, but invariably, we can't spend a day or a day and a half together without somebody saying, can I raise an issue about staff? Okay. Yeah. And I sometimes wonder, do those issues arise when productivity falls off? Is that a symptom of a larger problem? So I think my core question here is, Brandy, how should leadership in an agency, how should agency principals and agency managers or supervisors align, inspire and align staff around key strategy or key issues?
So the big word that comes to mind for me is part of those five core big bullet points that I talk about foundationally in Conversations for Action. And the big word that comes up for me when you say that is agreement. I find that we have a lot of conversations with people. We're talking about strategy, but we don't necessarily have agreement with people about who's going to do what and when. And so that's where things fall off. You asked about productivity falling off. I think probably a lot of the listeners are feeling like, well, heck, productivity's always falling off. You know,
yeah.
It's like, what does that mean? That doesn't have a beginning or an ending. We're always in that space where we think we could do a better job with productivity. And one of the reasons why it falls off is because we may be good, or I believe we were conditioned for this, right, as managers or leaders, or maybe by our parents or society, that if you tell people what to do, that they're going to get it done. And I say that's just like telling your kids to clean their room. You expect it to get done. It's your standard on your timeline, and that your kids will continue to clean their room in infinitum. You'll never have to ask them again.
Right.
And then that leads to my math formula, which is expectations plus reality equals disappointment.
Okay, run that by me again.
Okay, what? So expectations
right.
plus reality equals disappointment.
Got it. Okay, and you call that your what formula?
Math formula,
got
like
it.
Arithmetic.
Okay,
but,
got it.
Right. With people, right?
Okay.
So, and that's just because we have this propensity as leaders in management. It's how we were conditioned. Not a lot of us went to school for this, that we use the tell-do method of management, which is I tell you what to do, and I expect that it'll get done. And many times we're disappointed in the lack of what we would say results. People aren't doing what we ask them to do or what we expect them to do. And then we kind of fall into my least favorite word in the English language is communication. Every stinking survey I've done since 2003 says, mm-hmm. Lack of communication. I see it from leaders. I see it from staff. I see it from, you know, sales teams and underwriting teams and with the GAs that I work with. The communication means nothing until we define it and figure out, do we have agreement? Are we clear about who said that what they were going to do? And then when is our trigger, right? When is our ability to step in and figure out where things kind of took a right exit, you know? And so so we create strategic plan, we create conversation,
mm-hmm.
but then we don't necessarily know where to step in when the wheels start falling off.
So help us out here. Where do people step in, and where do wheels typically fall off?
Well, so first of all, I don't think we create enough agreements in our conversation.
Okay.
So who's going to do what and when? The second thing is,
let me pause you for a moment. How do you know when you do have an agreement?
Okay, so there are only three answers to a request. What are they?
Yes, no, and maybe.
That's right. Yes, no, or maybe. Okay. Okay. So, hey, Michael, could you have that report to me on my desk by Friday?
Yes.
I don't hear yes, no, or maybe. We right. negotiate. I do not have an agreement.
Got it.
The problem is, just because I sent an email or I made a request doesn't necessarily mean now that we have clear expectations of one another. That you even know what the report is or what should be done. And in a world where everybody talks about being busy, this is where the wheels start falling. Oh, I was too busy. Oh, I didn't get your email. Oh, I didn't know what you meant, so I did nothing. Most of the time, when people don't know what to do, they do nothing.
Got it. Okay. So let me, I want to dive into this a little bit more. We've all seen situations where people do what they're told, but we've also seen situations where people are inspired to do what they're told, where they not only put their time into it, but they put their heart into it. What is it?
Yeah, less than 30%.
Less than 30%. Okay. So what does a leader need to do to get that kind of a result?
Yeah. So in the old days, we used to talk about managed motivation versus self-motivation, right? So what's more powerful? Obviously, self-motivation.
Right.
When I feel compelled, like you say. And part of that internal compelling from a person has to do with how well my leader has articulated their vision. And I'm not talking like, you know, some stupid, you know, forgive me, but, you know, mission statement or vision statement or value statement that gets put in a frame and stuck up at the front desk and even the receptionist doesn't know what the heck is up there or how we're supposed to operate. Vision comes from the heart of the leader that says, this is what we aspire towards, this mm-hmm. is what matters here, and then gets the rest of the team to start talking about, well, what does that mean to you? How does that show up for the customer? What do we do when we have difficult conversations? What if we have a donkey account that isn't paying their bills or is treating people poorly? How do we align with our vision to move them through a process or move them out the door? So it's not just about articulating a message or declaring something. It's about having other people engage and say, this is what it means to me, and this is what I will or won't do as a result.
Do you find that the quality of the conversation that you're talking about right now doesn't happen very often in insurance agencies?
No doubt.
Okay.
You know that too.
Well, yeah, okay. So that was my leading question with the predictable answer. But it seems to me that, well, I want to offer our listeners a solution. Okay.
Yeah.
So over the years and working with agencies myself, you know, there have been times where I've supplied content or agendas for staff meetings because I discovered, gosh, a lot of our clients, they're not even really having staff meetings. It's just kind of show up to work and, you know, work 40 hours and then the weekend rolls around. And there was never any meaningful conversation that took place within the team. So these enlightened or inspired conversations that represent the best of our culture in an agency or in a business, those conversations don't happen, so that culture doesn't develop.
Yeah, because we're too busy.
Yeah, well, okay. So,
and then we complain about being busy, and then we complain when things aren't going well, you know, the disappointment side of the formula. And so, like you say, having an agenda, talking about what your vision is, what you'd like to see, and then getting the staff to actually have space, because everyone's tired of hearing one person at the staff meeting talk. And so we need to engage other people in their opinions. You know, here's the thing on the agency side. Account managers, you know, CSRs,
right.
They're brilliant people who handle multi-million-dollar problems every day. They certainly have an educated voice, even if they're new to the industry, about their perspective about how do we apply what we say we want into the real world.
Right.
It's just that we often don't open up that space, to your point. And so, and here's the other thing I know, that most of the leaders and the managers, they have a vision, they have a passion inside of them, or they'd be out of business by now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of them taking that information from, you know, their heart and their mind and getting it out into a team meeting and saying, hey, what do you guys think and what do we do about it? It's just asking those right. two extra, you said you wanted solutions, you know, two extra questions and then being quiet long enough to let people answer and then saying, okay, then when are we going to start? When's our by when? You know, when does it begin? How do we know when we're on track? How do we know if we're off track? And then what are we going to do about it?
All right. So you said two extra questions. zero. What are those two extra questions?
Yeah, so it was, you know, what does this mean to you? I think we have the ability to grow our book of business by, you know, double digits or by single digits, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
Like, I think or I feel or I believe this is the potential we have in our organization. It could be the same thing for a wholesaler or GA that's listening. I mean, I work with, you know, great people who have the same challenges. They have a strategic plan, then they don't know where to take it. First quarter, and now the wheels are falling off. So it's, what do you think about this? This is what I think. Now, what do you think?
Right.
And then
okay.
What should we do about it and when? Who's going to take it? Can we break people off into teams? How are we going to know we're moving in that direction? And planning for the fail.
Got it.
And planning for the fail. That's the other thing we don't do well. We don't want to think we're failures. We don't want to think we aren't going to succeed. But the reality is it's like driving a manual transmission or a stick shift, right? I mean, the first time you tried to do that, like my grandfather was with me, you know, 40-acre alfalfa field in a 1960 Jeep. I mean, we were out there, you know, grinding gears. And that's what change is really about. We just don't anticipate that change is uncomfortable and we're going to screw up and fail. We just got to plan for it.
So your two questions. First one, what does this mean to you? Seems like it's kind of an internal question that it causes people to reflect internally to find the inspiration or to find how that vision resonates for them. And then the second question seems to be the external question. How are we going to do this in the real world? Am I reading that
right?
Yeah,
and what does it look like? That's exactly right.
What does it look like? Okay.
I want examples. I want concrete information that says it looks like this, and then what are we going to do about it and when? So who's going to take this on? What project do we begin? How do we incorporate this in a sustainable way into our culture? You mentioned culture earlier.
Right.
So how do we not make this just a project, but it's a way of us thinking differently? And I just say simple things get implemented, complicated doesn't. And so how do we keep it simple? Keep it simple.
Got it. Okay. Is there a, I don't know, I realize we're probably not going to have a magic wand on this, but do you have a protocol, a discipline for the frequency of meetings or the style of meetings? Because I know that, you know, like one of the things that people often hate the most are meetings. So how do we solve that problem?
So I think it's like a funnel. I really do. I think you have more in the beginning, and then as time goes on and you develop a rhythm, it's just like the flywheel effect from, you know, Jim Collins' Good to Great book so many years ago, right? You know what I mean? It's tough, and we're grinding gears, and it's a struggle in the beginning, and it's awkward and difficult, and we're going to screw up. But as we push through that, it gets better. So you may meet twice a month in the beginning. You may meet once a week in the beginning. To talk about what does this mean, what does it look like, everybody go away, submit answers to me Friday by 5, we'll talk about it at the Monday morning meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that may look that way for a month or 2 months. And then we say, okay, you team, you have this project that you say you want to accomplish, let's let that team go work on that, come back and report to us now at the monthly meeting.
Got it. Okay. Without naming names, Brandy, can you think of a client of yours who really gets this? Because I'm curious, what does this look like?
I've got several.
Oh.
And the way that they got it was by going through they've taken it and they now call it a reset. So what happened was is we had an older generation, we had a dad, and we had a couple of partners, and then now we've got the second generation who's coming in. So we've got a son and another partner and another son, and now they are trying to, and they called it the reset.
Yeah.
So for example, I came in and kind of opened up all this conversation like we're doing today and said, okay, what do you guys want for this organization? Not just the leaders, but the staff. Like, what do you guys want? Like, there's a transition happening. And then they took it and called it a reset. And listen, there was knockdown, drag-out conversation between the partners. They had been misaligned for a while. I'm talking the second generation, all right?
Got it.
Dad was super nice, right? Dad was the nice guy. Everybody loved Dad. He listened to everybody, but he never really followed through because he didn't want the conflict. Now the son is coming in.
Yeah.
We got that going on. Son's coming in with the partner saying, we got to do something different. And the two of them have had some difficult conversations, shall we say, about, well, where the hell, heck do we want to go? Sorry. Where the heck do we want to go? I get excited about this stuff. It's cool stuff. Where the heck do we want to go? What does it really mean for us? And how do we move campers to climbers in this agency? Because we obviously have a fair amount of people, as you alluded to earlier, that are not engaged, who've been able to kind of camp out, do their own thing, and we haven't had conflict. And in order to move the agency forward, they have to have conflict. They have to have these conversations. So one of the things that they've done is they said, okay, this is what we want. What do you guys think? How do we apply it? Nobody really believed it was going to happen, right?
Right.
So then they came back and said, okay, here's how it's going to go. You all now get to choose. Do you want to be inside sales or outside sales producers? Because you now have to prove to us that you want to be outside sales. This is the behavior that we're looking for. These are the habit patterns we're looking for. We don't care how long you've been here.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, did that shake things up, right? So they then had to submit a business plan and a marketing plan of what they wanted to do in their career starting in January, right?
Got it.
So it's like,
yeah.
All right, what are we going to do, right? And what does it look like? And then they had to demonstrate the quarter before January. They were actually serious. So it was beyond just submitting information and beyond having a conversation. Now they have to physically show up and do something about it. It has dramatically changed their culture. And guess what else has happened? The staff are starting to get engaged because they don't feel like they're the only ones being the workhorse.
Got it.
They're like, wow, we're getting recognized. And then there's others like that, but you asked for an example.
Yeah, okay, got it. And so what's the difference in the way that agency performs now compared to what it was before?
Yeah, so one of the things that they found when they ran the numbers is that they were losing a lot of money.
Oh.
They didn't.
Okay.
What a big surprise. And you know, I mean, we're talking a significant amount of money over the past 5 years, like hundreds and thousands of dollars, okay, of revenue that had been lost by allowing people to camp out, okay? And now they're at double-digit growth. Because they've said,
yeah.
Who are you? How are you going to play here? We want to see it, not just talk about it. So, you know, my two favorite words, you know, my least favorite word is communication until we define it. But my two favorite words are by when. So everything that they did had a timeline. Who's going to do what and by when?
Right.
And if the staff didn't meet the timeline, well, then, you know, the partners called them in and said, hey, this is what you said you were going to do. Not what we told you to do, but this is what you said you were going to do. How come it isn't getting done? What happened? What got in the way? Are you feeling all right? Do we need to sit with you and help you with your plan? Do we need to get additional support, staff, whatever? And so they've engaged their people in a different way.
Got it. Okay. Let's shift gears and talk about customers.
Yes.
One of the I know that you share with me a fascination with language, and you know, so I want to talk about some of the language that gets used in our industry. Every industry develops its own lingo, and it becomes inside language versus sort of outside language, and it's
like risk management and insurance solutions.
Yeah, well, here's another one that. Has concerned me for years and years and years, because I think to some extent it's dehumanizing when we on the inside call people who we insure policyholders.
Yeah, nice. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, clearly, you know, there's a meaning to it, but it seems that there's a sort of a dehumanizing connotation to it that concerns me. So now I'm going to combine that with some research, okay? And the research seems to be first of all unequivocal. Some of it was done by Ernst Young a couple of years ago. What they determined was that 86% of insurance consumers are, quote, not very satisfied, unquote, with the communications they receive from their provider. 44% don't recall receiving any communication from their insurance provider in the last 18 months.
Yeah, because we're too busy.
Let's talk about that. It seems that the ideal relationship between the insurance agency and the quote unquote policyholders is that there's trust, there's respect, maybe even admiration, that there's comfort, that there's peace of mind. And yet what the research seems to be showing is that that's not what the consumer is basically feeling. And, you know, maybe my point about language is secondary, but I'm concerned about what seems to be a growing gap between the insurance, the independent insurance agency of today and the consumer of today.
So, okay, so this is a big thing, right? Because you're talking about, you know, new business, you're talking about relationships, you're talking about building trust in the prospecting process for sales, you're talking about account management teams being free enough to be human and not be transactional. You're talking about cross-selling, account rounding, and upselling, and connecting with people to maximize profit. I mean, this is we could do a four-part series, right, Michael? I mean, you know, this is a big topic. How do we dehumanize? And I think the challenge that I see for the customer experience is directly related to the amount of overwhelm that I see from my account manager teams. And it's not just on the independent side. I see it from my underwriters. I see it on the GA side with those underwriting teams as well, desperate to try and continue to write business and then retain business. So this is a loaded topic for sure. I've got to feel that I have enough space in my day to treat somebody as though they're human and not a transaction. Because when I'm busy, and I know I've made a couple little side comments about, well, I'm too busy.
Right.
By the way, leaders never talk about being busy. I never hear a great leader ever say, I'm too busy, I'm so swamped, I have so much going on. Because if what we're committed to create in our relationships is a sense of trust and closeness mm-hmm. and dehumanization, when I tell people that I'm busy, it does the exact opposite, right? It doesn't draw people close to us, it pushes people away. So first of all, take busy and overwhelm out of your language. And the second thing is, I don't want anyone to feel that I'm too busy for them. On the other hand, I have to use language to create boundaries in my conversation so that the insured, the policyholder, that says, oh, do you have a second, Michael, doesn't take 45 minutes of your time when it really could have taken 10.
Got it.
I've got to use language to be able to create boundaries that says, okay, hold on just a second. I'm working on a project. How about I've got 20 minutes, and then I look at the clock, and I say, that's at, you know, 20 till the hour. Can we wrap up close to that time? They say yes, no, or maybe, right, mm-hmm. We negotiate.
Right.
And then right at 5 minutes till, I said, oh, Michael, remember I mentioned that I had that other project I'm working on. Could we go ahead and wrap up? What can I do last to make this a great call for you? So that's one way, is I've got to create boundaries in a relationship. The second thing is I've got to have a workflow and a process where I'm batching my work as much as possible, because we know that Henry Ford created the assembly line because it was the best, most efficient use at that time, you know, in human history. But also I see the parallels today. If I can batch my work and do things, as we would say in insurance, in like, kind, and quality, I'm faster, I'm more efficient, I'm able to work in such a way that people feel more like I'm talking to them as a human being and not as a transaction. So, you know, when you talk about the human experience, I believe it's directly connected to my ability to be able to manage the tasks that are on my desk. Mm-hmm. Then I have time to ask the additional questions. Then I have time to develop rapport the way I'd really like.
So do you think that being too busy is that a legitimate issue in our industry? And do you think it's unique? I mean, don't you think you could just jump into another industry and everybody who's working would pretty much say the same thing?
Oh, no doubt. Right. Okay. I mean, no doubt. We're all, I think one of the things I talk about is in the 1970s, the U.S. Department of Tourism actually thought with the onset of the personal computer and the business computer that we would have up to 20 hours additional in our work week for leisure activities. Right. That's why you see all the Marriott's and the IHOP's and all these things, right, come up, you know, Applebee's. And all of a sudden we thought, oh, we're going to have more money and more time to spend. Of course, we found that the opposite has been the case. Yeah, we're eating out more often, by the way, because we're so busy.
We're so busy.
Go home and cook.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a direct correlation here. We've got to get a better handle on how we communicate with people, how we're batching our work, so that we have space. And I'm not just talking transactional space, but I'm talking mental space, to treat people in such a way that they feel like that they matter.
Got it. Okay. So years ago when I was teaching the CSR Mastery Program, one of the phrases that we used was, you know, when your customer calls, your customer is not an interruption from the job. The customer is the job. Now that it's, that sounds like a great inspirational piece of content, but I don't want it to be a platitude. And so how do we help a CSR? Let's just stick with that for a moment. How do we help a CSR who actually is busy, maybe too busy, to take the moment or take the attitude and be fully present with the person who's on the phone with them?
Okay, so I've got to have a workflow program, because I have people on my staff that are incredibly efficient at what they do. So I want your listeners thinking about, everybody listening today, think about who is the account manager that you have on your team that you would esteem to be super efficient. And if they are saying they are incredibly overwhelmed, you need to listen.
Got it. Oh,
and so, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, in other words, where's our benchmark, right? Like, where's our marker here? And it is that we know that you've got a couple people on your team, on average, that are super, super good at what they do, and they're workhorses, and they're getting a lot done, and they're crying and saying they're overwhelmed. And our tendency is to say, oh, my gosh, my staff says they're overwhelmed. Like you said, is that a real thing? We're so busy. And so our tendency sometimes is to create a little bit of indifference around that. Oh, they're all complaining. You know, they just need to work harder or get smarter or whatever. Well, so I look at the couple people on my team that are super, super sharp and say, man, if they're complaining, we need to look into this. And the answer, the solution is I need to develop a workflow program for them. And you know, we talk about that. We're right smack dab in the middle of this. You know, when I get off the phone with you, I'm working on it with other teams. And it is that thing I talked about, batching their work and creating a system where they're communicating with each other, personal lines, commercial lines, benefits, life department, where they're saying, what are the things that we do in a given work week? Can we list those out 1 to 20? And then can we do certain things on certain days? Now, I know this sounds crazy, but again, it goes back to language, okay? So my consumer calls up and says, hey, it's a contractor, for example, and they say, hey, I need a certificate. I know some of you listening said, oh, yeah, we're not going to push them off till Tuesday. Well, maybe you are. Now, let me give an example before everybody freaks out on me. Say, wait a minute. So he calls up and says, I need a certificate. Then the question becomes, absolutely, Steve, we'll get that to you. I usually do those on Tuesday. Will that work for you, or do you need it sooner?
Uh-huh.
And that simple question has changed the lives of so many account managers that I've worked with, because it allowed us to have it, not it have us. Now, if Steve, my contractor, says, no, I'm on my way to the city, I got to get this done right away. So, oh, okay, no sweat. We'll get it done for you by 5,
right?
Otherwise, I can use that opportunity in language to move it to that task for Tuesday. You know, that sounds like such a simple thing, but wow, has it changed and empowered my account managers. So we look at the couple people that are really sharp that we know have it together. If they're overwhelmed, we got to put a program together. Then that program is a workflow system. And you can do this with your teams and have changes, no backlog, 30 days. I've been doing this since 2003, and it's just made a huge difference. But again, it's by having that meeting, getting the team engaged to say what they want, and having them work together, and then reporting back to my leader saying, hey, this is what we're doing, and this is how we've slotted our work.
Okay, so let me see if I'm hearing something from you properly. Communication is critical to success. Communicate, and I know you don't love the word, but the ability to have meaningful conversations with your team is critical to align them around strategy, to deliver tasks, to inspire them to deliver their best. Communication with customers is critical to earn their respect and their trust. And yet, a common and maybe the single biggest common objection is, I'm too busy. Right? So I think what you're saying, Brandy, is that time management is a serious problem that stands in the way of communication on our part of the industry. We got to deal with it.
And no doubt. I know that time management is one of those big topics. But remember, we can't manage time.
Right.
We can only manage our energy.
Mm-hmm.
So if I start thinking about it that way, then I'm going to start thinking about and allocating, where does my day look? Where do I need to be saying no? We have a whole bunch of nice people in our industry who are amiable and love the customer and don't like confrontation. One of the things we have to learn is how to say no. Do a better job with that.
Okay. So time is a real issue, and people need to take a look at that so that they can allocate appropriate resources to communication. I mean, it seems that communication is one of the big rocks, and if it's not getting taken care of, you have to figure out a way to take care of it. So,
yeah, it's not just some fluffy, you know, soft skill
word, right?
I mean, it's definitely connected to everything else that we say is important, like profitability and results and training and getting people to do what we ask them to do.
Got it. All right. So let me ask a related question. We know that in a typical agency, a CSR really is responsible for handling a big part of the book of business, whether it's, you know, personal lines, small commercial lines, or some supporting commercial lines brokers. They are a window in, but also a mouthpiece out.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of communication that happens at that level. And having the right people with the right innate attitude is important. So other than saying, make sure that you put somebody through a battery of tests first, like, you know, personality or psychological tests first, what is important in a CSR? And how does a person who's hiring, like a leader, a principal, or a manager, a supervisor, how do they to the best of our ability, how do they know that they're getting that when they bring somebody new onto the team?
Oh my gosh, you don't know.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And on that note.
You don't know. I mean, and this is one of the things.
Well, life is about making best guesses. So.
Michael, I mean, we don't know. You can test them. You can interview. They can show up in a pretty suit. And then you think, wow, they've got a great smile, great attitude, and they're dressing well, and they're saying all the right things. But, man, we don't know until they get in the job and they're faced with all this adversity and tough times. And, you know, maybe there's gossip already going on in the office. Some people have negative attitudes. You know, do they jump on that bandwagon to themselves? Geez Louise, you know, nobody knows. Sorry. I wish, like you said, I wish there was a magic wand or an easy button here, but there's not. What we can do is, and this seems to be a topic I've been discussing a lot lately with my clients, and that is the difference between training and mentoring.
Ah, okay.
All right.
Yeah,
so
talk about that for a moment. That sounds important.
Yeah. We'll see if it is, right? So training is the how, right? Training is the how and the
yeah.
what. This is how we want you to do it. This is what we want you to do. Mentoring is the thinking ability and skills. You know, why do we want you to do it? And how are you actually, relating to the why? And so one of the things I did, I just got off a Skype call this morning with one of mine, and I said, all right, principal owner, you're getting further along in the agency, and now you're saying, I want to be able to bring continuity between all the offices. I want people to start connecting better. I want to have more consistency, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, great. Then send me a bullet point list of the areas that you believe you need to mentor. And for crying out loud, there's so much cool technology now that's even free where you record luncheon learns. So come up with your bullet point list of the mentoring topics. And then I want you to record it and then put it in your shared drive and you'll have it forever.
Ah.
Have a place to reference. Your question was, you know, how do we know when we bring people on? Well, the reality is we don't. And so we have to have, yes, training, onboarding. You know, I have a thing called 30, 60, 90, right? What do we expect from you in the first 30 days, the next 60, and the next 90?
Right.
Here's the truth. Manager never knows when the 90-day mark is, but the employee always knows, right? Employee always knows their 1-year work anniversary or their 10-year. Employers often don't do a great job with that. So to answer your question, we don't know. We can't guarantee any of that stuff. What we can do is decide what's the difference between training conversation and mentoring conversation and creating a schedule for that? Then we have a little better chance of moving everybody forward in the culture.
What does an effective mentoring relationship look like? And it's, I think this is a fascinating topic because I haven't heard this often in our industry.
We don't do a good job.
Yeah, I mean, we hear, well, you read about it, you know, in the business magazines,
and,
you know, but we don't. Yeah, real mentoring. I mean, so often it seems that it's the mentee's job to go find the mentor, but in an organization,
but they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
Right? They don't know what they're supposed to look for.
Right. So how can you create a culture of mentoring in an agency?
It's super easy.
Yeah.
We just ask, right? So get a shoebox and cut a hole in the top.
Yeah.
And tape the lid and ask your team. In fact, one of the survey questions we always ask is, what areas would you like more training on? I mean, it's so simple. Ask your team. They're super smart. And by the way, they're complaining about it. They're complaining about it anyway. So they're complaining about what they're not getting, or, oh, I should have the training, or, oh, I did this because I didn't know. So look, break all that wide open and ask them. Give me two or three areas. Ask every person two or three areas that you would like more training on and something that you would like mentoring on. And just see what happens. I say it that way just because I know what comes, but I'd like the listener to try this. You guys try it. I don't care if it's anonymous. They can type it up so they don't have to worry about handwriting and, oh, you know, my handwriting. Type it up and have it on your desk by, you know, noon on Friday. Have everybody turn it in or stick it in the shoebox.
Mm-hmm.
And then now my owners and managers say, oh, I know about these topics. Or, oh, if I had an opportunity, I'd like to share my voice. All of this lives within you already. It's just a matter of creating the structure to have it come out.
Got it. Okay. I love the idea of creating a mentoring relationship within agencies.
And look, some agencies say, well, you know, that sounds great, Brandy, but if we bring in a young producer, my established producers don't want to do it. They don't have time.
Right,
they want to be out playing golf.
Yeah, okay.
You know, too damn bad.
Yeah,
Michael, you
right.
know, this is what it's going to take to grow the agency to the next level. And here's what we found statistically,
uh-huh.
is that in order for 50-something-year-olds to continue to be engaged, they need a younger generation that they can talk to. Very, very interesting
oh,
stuff
interesting.
That's coming out nowadays.
Yeah.
So even if they don't like it, if, to your point, if you were to help give them a little bullet point list is, okay, Steve, this is what we want you talking with Jeff with,
mm-hmm.
you know, for an hour a week or 2 hours a week.
Right.
We want to talk about your toughest challenges, your biggest failures, your biggest, you know, like you said, a little bullet point list of an agenda.
Right.
And then Jeff, the producer, the new person coming in, or Jane, or whoever it is, or Julie, they now come back to you as the leader and say, this is what I learned from that conversation. There's your by when.
Got it.
Now my owner knows whether or not it's really happening or not.
Yeah. Okay. Love this. This is good. Would love some of our listeners to test this and give us some feedback on it. I have one or two more questions for you, Brandy.
I'm on yours.
All right. First one is, I guess I need to put this in some context. As you know, I've noticed this with over the years, you know, with some of my clients, as the agency gets bigger and bigger, it grows from, let's say, that point where the agency principal knows a lot of the customers to now they've got 5,000 customers or 10,000 customers, and frankly,
impossible.
And they don't know them, This is on my mind right now. I'm putting the finishing touches on my next book on content marketing. And a critical part of content marketing is it's all about delivering ongoing value to your customer base and to your marketplace. And in order to do that, you need to know what's in the heart and on the mind of the customers and the marketplace. So you need to be able to listen to them. Well, for a lot of agency principals who want growth, they've gotten farther and farther away from the customer base. Their own book of business may be just now a small portion of the business. They might specialize in one niche and not really understand the others. And so it seems that sort of the, you know, I don't want to be too dramatic about it, but the seed of destruction is kind of planted in its in success itself, and that there's some danger when the agency principal becomes too far removed from the customer base, and yet they are busy. They do have other responsibilities.
But here's the thing: guess who isn't out of touch?
Who's
the
not?
Account manager.
Okay.
The account manager,
right,
who talks to the customer every day. Now, look, here's the reality: we're not doing an exceptional job of talking to all our customers all the time and doing renewal reviews. And I know we talk about it, but it isn't
right.
really happening.
Right.
But at least we have a better opportunity to capture some of the information you're talking about in content marketing through the account managers, through the CSRs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
Well,
that's it. That's one of the things that I suggest. It's a concern I have that if I ask agency leadership to at least create the essence of the content and identify the topics of content, they may not know the answer, but you're saying the answer is probably resident right now in the agency among those who do talk.
Okay.
And that you
so
can,
here's
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, well, and you probably can formalize it by asking them to keep a list of questions that they hear during the course of a week or two.
Yeah, so here's the thing, and it ties into the account rounding, cross-selling and upselling program that we talk about, is your team will not make outbound phone calls because they're too busy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
However, on average, they are receiving 10, 15, 20, 30 incoming phone calls a day. Certificates, changes, processing things. Don't ever ask on a claim, okay, everybody? And we all know that. Don't ever ask on a claim. But guess what? I'm calling for, by the way, this happened, or, what do I do here? And so it's not difficult for my account managers to ask two more quick questions before we get off the phone. Whatever those are that fold into the content marketing.
Got it.
And then keep a tally.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, it doesn't take us 3 months, 90 days, where we have a tally of, with whom did we speak, what did they have to say, what are our numbers, and then we can figure out who is left, on the outside that we haven't talked to. And by the way, we need to be going and getting referrals off of those existing customers. My new producers need to be getting referrals off of existing house accounts because they have a relationship with us.
Right.
They don't need to be out there cold calling. It's not working. But that's another topic.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. I've got one last question for you. One that I often end a podcast with. So imagine that the insurance industry is zooming down insurance highway at 65 miles an hour, and Brandy gets to put a billboard that is designed to get their attention, but of course, if it has more than 8 or 10 words, nobody's going to be able to read it. You want to deliver a message that matters and means something to this industry. What do you want to say?
I want to say that implementation and accountability will change everything in your agency.
Bingo. Okay. Thank you very much. Brandy, if people want to reach out to you, if they want to find out more about what it is that you do, how should they do that and what should they know about you?
Just go to powerhouselearning.com. There's lots of cool information there, and you can reach out to me directly. Go to Ask Brandy. You can ask a question anonymously, and we'll answer you back. Or you can call at 208-316-7656.
Very good. All right. Brandy, this has been a pleasure. I've enjoyed talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us, and perhaps we'll do this again in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.